From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
He is Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You are listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Hey there, Marjorie.
Hey.
So Tuesday at noon, as you guys know, we ordinarily are joined by CNN's John King. But today we had an opportunity to get both a governor and a grandfather, so we opted for him. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio for his monthly Ask the Governor. Congratulations, Governor Patrick.
Thank you very much. We are very excited about Gianluca Noah Patrick Morghese, who was born 2 months early at 2 pounds, 8 ounces, and about 3 weeks ago, and he's holding his own, and he and his mom are doing well, and Nona and Papi, meaning my wife and me, are floating on air.
Oh, that's one. That's so really it's different than being a parent. That's what everyone says.
Everybody says that having grandkids, you wish you'd started there before your children. But we haven't met him yet.
Oh, you haven't?
We haven't met him. We hope to meet him at the end of this month.
Great. Well, welcome. We're glad you. If you want to talk to the governor, he'll be with us till 1 o'clock. The number is 877-301-8970. Or you can email a question to BPR, as in Boston Public Radio, at WGBH.org.
Well, Governor, before we get to more serious stuff, I'm dying to ask you this because it was one detail left out of a great story. No one begrudges you. You're going out to Rouge in West Stockbridge.
Oh, here we go.
The week after the end of the marathon week, which was a terrible week for you. And for many people, obviously, goes without saying. But I'm dying to know. You had a couple of glasses of Chardonnay. You said you were a little tipsy. You were reading a book on your iPad. Pray, what book was that?
Oh, man.
Oh, come on. I'll be devastated if you can't remember.
I can't remember.
Was it like War and Peace or John Grisham?
I've read another book since then. I don't think I had started The 12 Tribes of Hattie, which I just finished.
Oh,
have you read that?
No, but I heard it's great.
Hmm.
No?
It's worth it.
It's worth
it. The writing is amazing. The story is a little, well, actually, Diane was reading it at the same time. I can't remember whether I was still working on the Ding biography. Anyway,
who's Ding?
From China.
From China. Okay, I'm sorry. So you're a history reader or a fiction reader?
I read it all.
You read it all. Okay,
yep.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
You and Sarah Palin, I mean, the same sort of thing. Now, Governor, if I may, speaking of the marathon.
I cannot see Russia from my backyard.
obviously, this was the night after the Tsarnaev, both the killing and the capture. I asked you shortly after the marathon situation if there was anything that you had learned that caused you to believe that it was possible that April 15th was preventable, and you said no. Since we saw you, Bill Keating, a congressman, came back from Russia after having met with some Russian authorities, said he thought it was preventable. Robert Mueller, soon to be former head of the FBI, going out, testified in front of Congress the other day and said, and I'm paraphrasing, the lack of communications within the FBI prevented notification of the Russians that the older brother was going back there. And he said, they said that had they known, this marathon bombing could have been prevented. Do you feel any differently based upon what you've learned in the last month or so?
Well, not based upon what I've learned, and I think I have seen or been briefed on all of the intelligence that there is. I know that there was a notification from, and by the way, this is not to apologize for the lack of communication between agencies, mm-hmm. but my understanding is that the information that we got from the Russians was about the radicalization of Black Hat, the older brother, and concerns that Russia had about his behavior in Russia,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of information that would have led anybody to anticipate that he was planning to harm us here in Greater Boston was just not there. But look. You know, the other part of this is, and it's been so interesting in the wake of the debates around the internet surveillance and the telephone records and so forth, is that you still have to ask yourself, and I think as a country we are asking ourselves, when you get a little bit of information, what do you do then? What's enough to justify following somebody around and, you know, tapping their phone and all that sort of thing? And I think as a country we haven't really sorted that out yet.
So, just so I'm clear, are you open to the notion that it's possible this could have been preventable had all the government entities done their job and shared the information?
I don't see how it would have been preventable based on sharing the information I'm told we had. Now, you know, if there is other information, that's another story. But based on what we – but look, I think more to the point, as I said at the time, the takeaway for me and the positive one I think for all of us is how well all of the agencies pulled together and performed at their best in the wake of it. And not just the agencies, but not just law enforcement, but the medical professionals and frankly, regular old people too just stepped up and brought their best.
Let me just give the number again. If you want to talk to the governor again, he'll be with us till 1, and your turn will come in a couple of seconds. 877-301-8970.
Marjorie.
You know, just one quick follow-up on that before we get to the phone calls. President Obama's been taking some heat about this NSA people, the secret court that allows people's phone records, Facebook, the whole nine yards on the internet to be looked at. Some people in Massachusetts, about 40% of people in Massachusetts, are very concerned, and a few more, making a plurality, are quite concerned. What do you think about that?
I don't know what to think yet. I mean, I'm troubled by the abstract notion that that government is, you know, just checking out stuff that I think is or ought to be private and is harmless. I think most of us are troubled by the idea that something that we expect is private and know to be harmless would be the subject of review. I've talked to friends in the Congress on both sides of the aisle who have been briefed in greater detail than you and I have, some of whom I think started out very concerned and came away from those briefings not very concerned at all. So I still, you know, I'm trying to acknowledge that I don't have all the information I'd like to, and I wish that there was a way, and I'm hoping that there will be, for the public to be better informed than I think we have been without compromising national security.
Our number is 877-301-8970. Let's take some calls, Governor.
Let's see. Bill is calling from Braintree. Bill, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing, Governor?
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Governor, I'm a big supporter of yours, but I have had a problem trying to defend you on this welfare thing.
Yeah?
Just trying to find out where you're going to be on these welfare reforms and, you know, are they going to happen?
Well, I don't know what you have to defend because we've been leading the reforms. We've changed out leadership. We've got a 100-day plan in place, which has been acknowledged and celebrated by members of the legislature, by the auditor. The Senate proposed a set of welfare reforms, I think, just yesterday, which are actually very encouraging and place a greater emphasis on welfare as a way forward rather than a way of life, which I very much support, and provide some additional resources for enforcement around the integrity of programs. I think my issue has been, and Marjorie fusses at me about this from time to time too, is that DTA, the agency that's principally responsible, manages some $2 billion in benefits a year, thereabouts. And the extent of fraud and abuse that's been identified is about 1% of that. Now, that doesn't mean that isn't important. It is important. One abuse is important, but trying to keep it in perspective is part of what I've been trying to deal with.
Bill, thanks for the call.
You know, Marjorie, will fuss again here.
Yeah.
maybe I'm crazy, but I sometimes get the sense from you that you think that a lot of this reporting on welfare abuses is stigmatizing people, that it's unfair. Am I out of my mind, or is there something going on?
No,
there,
I mean, I have to live, Marjorie, in the world of fact and reality, and so parsing through the exaggeration in order to manage a problem and deal with a problem, I think goes with the job. And it doesn't mean I'm outraged when I learn that you know, some person who's dead,
dead
is
people.
getting benefits. But remember, when we got the first set of data from the auditor about that, 170 some odd cases, it turns out 17 of those were actual problems. The rest of them were not. So,
well, she disputes that, though, doesn't she?
No,
the auditor?
No, she doesn't. That's a matter of fact. That's not a matter of opinion. Now, we have since gotten the whole data set, and we're trying to go through that. But the sample we asked that we were given when we first asked for the data behind the report was that 170 cases. Now, here's the issue, and I think this is maybe one of tone, maybe the kind of thing that you or Bill, the caller, was concerned about. Any one case of a check going to somebody who's dead is a serious problem, right? And it undermines the credibility of a program whose fundamental good is something I support, and I think most people do. But all I'm trying to do is focus on a real problem, and not an inflated view of that problem, because that's the only all I can solve is a real problem.
Governor, a couple of quick things on this before we go back to the calls. One of the reforms was proposed in the measure that was introduced yesterday was requiring photographs on EBT cards. Would you support that if it got to you?
Well, the answer is probably, but I've been trying not to comment on the specifics of the bill just yet, of the proposals just yet, because there's a lot in motion. I think I'm right that. The Romney administration tried photos on EBT cards and then discontinued that practice because they concluded that the cost of that change wasn't worth the pickup in fraud detection. But there are a couple different things out there that are being proposed. I think there's a fingerprinting idea out there as well, and I don't think they are both in the same bill. But we're working with the Senate, and we look forward to working with the House to get to a really good, comprehensive bill, which is both about issues around integrity of the kind that Marjorie was just referring to in the caller, but also about making sure that welfare isn't a way of life, but really is a pathway to getting back on your feet.
One last thing. When the initial report came out from Suzanne Bump, who joined us here, the auditor, and by the way, a former member of your cabinet, for those who don't
recall.
And
a great auditor.
Well, actually, you were asked, though, was she doing a bad job? And you said, quote, "I think it's too soon to say." What do you mean, and is it now too soon? Apparently, your HHS people, Health and Human Services, who were with us yesterday, have resolved the disputes, the factual difference over the 1,160 dead people or whatever it is. But do you still feel it's too soon to say whether she's doing
a bad job? I think she's a terrific auditor, and I think she's a terrific person, and I loved having her in the administration, and I love the vigor of her office. I think that the frustration that I feel, and I think any governor would feel, is that you get reports without the underlying data. So you're told about a problem, but then you can't go fix the problem because you don't have the actual facts. And so trying to get some collaboration around that and some prompt disclosure of what it is they're looking at so that we can focus on a fix is enormously important, and I think at HHS and DTA and the auditor's office, they've been working that. They've been working that through.
Do you feel any frustration? We've discussed this with them yesterday. I don't know who else we discussed it with last. Maybe it was Suzanne Bump. The whole demonization issue. You did something a couple of years ago about all these tax expenditures, a couple of $1 billion in tax breaks, much of which go to corporations, many of which are never reviewed, tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars. A welfare recipient misspends her money or her son cashes it. We practically call out the National Guard on Beacon Hill. But what do you have frustration with the legislature in that they're deeply concerned about a poor person who misuses state money, but they seem, at least to me, have no concern for major businesses that take hundreds of millions of our dollars?
So I think that's unfair. I think it's an overstatement, at least of where I am. I think that there is a legitimate concern and ought to be a legitimate concern whenever any public funds are misspent. And I think that the volume may be greater around some of the welfare expenditures, but there is also concern about tax expenditures that have been embedded in the tax code for a long time that have outlived their usefulness. And the legislature partnered with us on a commission to look at those and to put in place a mechanism to review them periodically to see whether the public was getting the benefit from those tax expenditures, those tax breaks and so forth, that was intended. The ones that we've done since I've been in office have had that mechanism built in. So there's a clawback. If you know, for example, if it's about job creation, you don't actually get the jobs, then the state gets the money back. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
So, and I think trying to build that into how we periodically look at all of the ways we are giving benefits and breaks in the tax code is important. But the one doesn't cancel out the significance of the other.
Let's go back to the calls, 877-301-8970. He's Governor Deval Patrick. Governor?
Let's see. Ray is calling from Framingham. You there, Ray?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, Governor. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
My name is Roy Perkinson, and I'm an artist, and I heard some time ago about something I was hoping you might be able to help with. There's an artist living in our midst here. I think of him as a national treasure. His name is John Wilson. Mm-hmm. He's just turned 90. He's an Afro-American artist. He's been in the Boston area for many, many years. Danforth Museum just gave him a wonderful retrospective show not long ago.
Hmm.
Well, I heard not long ago that there is a terrific sculpture that Mr. Wilson did at Roxbury Community College. It represents a father reading to a son.
Hmm.
A very moving sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
But sadly, just, you know, when these things happen, there is no plaque that indicates that it is by Mr. Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
It's suffered some abuse from being located outdoors and needs some conservation treatment. And some time ago, I got a nice note from somebody in your office saying I should take it up with a representative. She forwarded my request to somebody else. And basically, I just wish that somehow or other, maybe even just a simple word to the trustees and the people that run Roxbury Community College could be, you know, result in some action to
mm-hmm.
try to help preserve this terrific work by what I think of as a living treasure of the United States.
Wow. First of all, Roy, I apologize for calling you Ray.
well, that's all right.
Apparently, I can't see this this screen.
Sure.
I'm supposed to. Can you make the font any bigger on this thing?
No, Governor.
I am
can't.
A grandfather,
sorry,
after all.
I'm sorry.
But I'm going over to Roxbury Community College right after I leave this broadcast. So I'll mention.
Awesome.
I'll mention to the leadership over there.
Okay.
Do you know where it is on the campus?
Not specifically. It's near the I think near the main building on the campus.
Okay.
And it's shows represents a it's somewhat abstract in a way, but it represents a father. You can clearly see it's a father reading to a young boy.
Okay. All right. I'll check it out.
Roy, thanks.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for the call, Roy. Roy.
Roy.
Roy.
Speaking of Roxbury Community College.
By the way, your person in the control room is putting all of the letters
in capital letters
now.
For you, yes.
Thank you very much.
That's great. Okay.
Very nice young
person. What's your grandfather name?
Poppy.
That's pretty cute. That's cute.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Roxbury Community College, you're going over there with Tom and Nina, the mayor of Boston, this afternoon to do something with about Madison Park High School and Roxbury Community College.
Yes,
what's happening?
It's very exciting. We're going to ink a new partnership, a part of what I believe will be the renaissance of both RCC and Madison Park, to create a new pathway, really, for into careers in the innovation industries, which are growing like weeds in within walking distance of those two campuses. So the notion of being able to enroll at Madison Park and in 5 years' time finish with a diploma, a high school diploma, an associate's degree, and a job for which you have been prepared and have had some apprenticeship or internship or like a Northeastern-style co-op along the way as part of what we're trying to create. We want to make sure that Madison Park functions in the daytime for students and in the nighttime for adult learners, that we build more, as I say, apprenticeships and co-ops into the curriculum, and we really set this up as a model for workforce development for the whole Commonwealth and, frankly, for the country. There are a couple of other examples of this that we're borrowing from in different parts of the country, and I think it's going to be really, really exciting and a big, big leap forward.
Speaking of jobs, I'm sorry, Margaret.
I was just going to say, you talked a lot about the fact that there are jobs waiting in Massachusetts.
141,000.
141,000, okay, right. that workers aren't able to fill. We were talking with actually Callie Crossley, who does a show on Sunday night, 6:30, Under the Radar with Callie Crossley, about this. She was pointed to this story, I think it was in The Globe, that said Microsoft and Google both
are— Talking about the computer training.
Yes, yeah. Want to have computer science taught in the school right away as a way to get rid of this stockpile of 141,000 jobs that we can't fill. What do you think about that?
I think it's a terrific idea. And like a number of like a handful of other really transformative ideas, things that we need to enable sooner rather than later. And in the absence, I mean, you know, the answer or part of the answer to many of these is the longer school day.
Right.
I think I told you the first time I mentioned my support for that idea, I was in front of 600 middle schoolers, and in Middleborough, I think it was, and I almost didn't get out alive. But I think it's right. I think we have a school day that's patterned on farming. You know, you get out in time to do your chores. The school year is patterned on farming, so you finish in time to plant. You stay out long enough to harvest. And we need more time on task. Now, that requires some resources as well. In the meanwhile, we need to be creative. There may be, and I suspect there are, people in Google and Microsoft and other tech companies who'd be willing to come in and help offer these kinds of that kind of training and those sorts of courses in the meanwhile until we can get them fully institutionalized. But I think this is exactly the kind of direction we need to be going in, and it's an element of I think you will see as the work plan is built out in that RoxMap, that Roxbury Madison Park partnership that we're going to announce this
afternoon.
Of course,
in charter schools that already have the longer school day,
well,
you could do this right away.
That's a part of their success, and both the so-called in-district and out-of-district charters, the innovation schools that we've talked about before, very much a part of addressing the range of additional needs that schools have to meet today that they didn't necessarily have to meet when you and I were in school, at least when I was in school.
Yeah. Me too.
I am a grandfather.
Me too.
Let's go back to the calls.
I'm aspiring, actually.
877-301-8970. Governor Deval Patrick with us and you till 1 o'clock.
Steve is calling from Mashpee. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine, and I wanted to just express first my deep appreciation. I'm a United Church of Christ pastor, and I deeply appreciate the leadership that you gave at the time of the tragedy at the marathon.
Thank you.
You helped us not to demonize anybody and to care for everybody, and so I just wanted to express that deep appreciation.
That's
I was
nice
so
of
proud
you to say.
Of you, leading us here in Massachusetts.
Thank you.
And my second point
you
is...
You can stop there. It's perfect.
A question. I'm calling from Mashpee on Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the Cape Flyer to reduce the traffic coming down here.
Have you taken it yet?
Pardon?
Have you taken it yet?
I haven't taken it yet, but I look forward to doing so.
I want to try it, too. This
so
is the train
we,
down
there. We have Rich Davian here. Secretary of Transportation. It's
great.
Go ahead,
great
Steve.
Thing.
I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. My question is, I support your proposals for education and transportation, but there's been significant pushback financially from the Rate and General Court. Where do we stand on some of those key elements in the transportation plan, restoring the commuter rail to Fall River, New Bedford, with electrified service by 2017, and improving passenger transportation out to Western Massachusetts? Where do we stand with those proposals?
So, Steve, first of all, thank you for the question and for the support. The transportation plan is a thoughtful and serious and long-term plan. And all of those elements, I think, are important, particularly the long-term part, because we've been patching and plugging for many years now. And basically, we have starved investment almost everywhere in the Commonwealth in order to pay for the big dig and still left big, big unpaid bills. So I think everybody gets that we need to make a substantial new and long-term investment in our transportation infrastructure, and that there has to be regional equity so that we're actually enabling economic growth in all corners of the Commonwealth. And I will say I think the legislature supports that principle as well. In terms of the status of the bill, you know, what we proposed was to do it all through the budget What the legislature has done is meaning both the transportation and the education part. What the legislature has chosen to do is take the transportation part out separately and do that and some revenue for the budget in a transportation bill. And that bill is in conference to work out the differences between the House and the Senate version. If they land at the Senate's number, which is $800 million, less than what I proposed by a good deal, but enough to be meaningful. And those are hard numbers, meaning not numbers that come and go, and there are reasons why we have been raising those questions, then I expect to be able to sign that that bill. I would have thought that bill would be done by now. There's a lot of business pending up on the up in the legislature right now, and I think they will have to get to it sometime in the next 10 days or so. I know they've been working on it. So we will see.
Steve, thank you kindly for your call. Governor, we're going to take a brief break. Before we do, quickly, you following the Bulger trial?
Some, yeah. You know, I just started reading
Black Mass?
Foley's book.
Oh, yeah, State Trooper.
Yeah.
Yes, it's supposed to be terrific.
It's really a page-turner.
He was the guy, they were the state troopers that kept bugging the Lancaster Street garage, and then they kept getting undermined by the FBI.
Right. You worked in the Justice Department, though. Just quickly, we're going to talk about this later with listeners. 12 years for a serial killer who admits to 20 murders, John Martirano, the guy
who's on the stand now.
He has the stand now.
Including two teenagers, innocent bystanders.
No ban on profiting from his crimes. $250,000 advance from the movie industry, movie rights. $110,000 for, I guess, half of the royalties for a book he wrote with Howie Carr. But it's not just funny.
Yeah.
Prosecutors who make these deals, I know they want to go up the ladder to the big guy. Isn't there a line? If it turns out you're a family member of one of these people who he murdered, and they got an average of 7 months for each murder, is that a deal that I don't mean, I shouldn't have asked you as a former Justice Department, but as a citizen, as a human being, what's your reaction to that kind of deal?
It's just it feels funny. It smells funny. But I know you like to invite me to be to have an opinion on everything.
Yes. Which you do, don't you not?
Well, I am trying not to be one of those. I don't think it's a requirement of being in public life, and I don't know all the details, but I can imagine if you were a family member feeling like justice has not been entirely done yet.
We got to take a break. He's Governor Deval Patrick. He'll be with us and you till 1 o'clock. Our number is 877-301-8970. Or you can email him a question. Even if he doesn't get to it, his office will before he's back next time. It's bpr@wgbh.org. Listening to Boston Public Radio, Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. This is Ask the Governor, where Grandfather Deval Patrick is with us until 1 o'clock.
You know, before we get back to the phone calls, there's an extraordinary amount of interest in something we talked about a couple of months ago. Hands-free gas pumps. I've just got a thing from our Facebook page.
You were asked about this. No, there was a call for you.
We were checking on the answer. What was the answer?
I don't know.
We're asking you.
Come on.
I don't know.
You've got to tell me.
People
this
are into this.
Over.
Ellen is an older woman. She's saying she is tough on her aging hands to have to continuously clench that pump handle. So these are the little things.
I'm surprised,
Governor,
she didn't ask for the old days when the attendant came out and
pumped
your gas.
Wouldn't that be nice? That's
those
right.
Those of us who are grandparents remember that kind of thing.
And
Rose is calling from
your windshield.
Fine, she is. Let's go. Rose, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Governor.
Good afternoon.
Jim.
Hi there, Rose.
Hi. May I just say that I've been listening to Marjorie and Jim since the days when you two used to be on Talk 96.9.
We remember that.
12 to 3, and you used to hand off to Jay Severin at 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you.
I love both of you. And next to Lavelle Diet, who used to love us all madly.
We remember him quite well.
For both of you. You do a credit to Talk Radio.
By the way, before you go away, Lavelle Diet, who died last year, who is legendary, would end every broadcast with, "I love you madly," which was just, it was just really beautiful.
Was.
But Rose, you're That's with the governor.
Great.
Go ahead.
That's great.
Yes. Governor Patrick, are you aware that similar types of surveillance privacy breaches that the Obama administration is being accused of have been perpetrated against citizens of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts during your administration?
No.
These violations of basic privacy have developed into statewide jokes. What do you have to say about the violation of basic civil liberties and basic civil rights?
Well, I don't accept what you're asserting based on what you just asserted. You got something more specific than that?
I have people who have sort of tippy-toed into people's email accounts, people who tippy-toe into people's phone conversations, things that I've heard read back to me.
Who are these
people? I live in Quincy. I live on the South Shore.
Yeah.
And I have not experienced this before. Since 06, I have to say since 06, I'm a black female.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give my age. I'm 39.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at the South Shore Plaza Mall, Gordon Taylor.
Hey, Rose, can I interrupt, if I may? This is Jim, only because what you're suggesting is pretty serious. If you send us an email at bpr@wgbh.org, we will share it with the governor, and if there is something to talk about, you have our
and
commitment
who's doing this?
That we will discuss it next month when the governor returns. So, Rose, thank you kindly for the phone call. 877-301-8970 is our phone number. Governor?
Can I go back to the calls?
Of course you can.
Malcolm is calling from Falmouth. Malcolm, you there?
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. Yeah, in light of the late-breaking news, I'm a little quandary as to whether I should call you, address you Poppy, Grandpa, or Governor.
Thank you for calling, Malcolm.
I'm calling about Falmouth's two wind turbines,
yeah.
The ones that are causing neighbors health problems and which have been declared by the Mass DEP to be in violation of the state noise regulations. When we sat down in December, along with the Secretary of Energy Sullivan, he said that he would not leave. When I asked about helping taking down the turbines, Secretary Sullivan said he would not leave Falmouth holding the bag. Now, in May, when I asked you in New Bedford, when will you help Falmouth financially, you said the people have to vote first. Now, the people have voted, and my question to you is, when are you going to be a man of your word and come down and help Falmouth financially get rid of these turbines?
Malcolm, they voted to keep them up.
No, they voted not to pay for your mistake, Governor.
No, Malcolm.
They voted
I'm
not
sorry.
To spend the money.
I'm sorry. There was a vote not to take them down, and it
no,
was, I think, 3-1, Malcolm. I mean, I know you have a point of view on this, and for listeners who don't know what we're talking about, it's two different ones, right, Malcolm? It's two different turbines?
There are two turbines, correct.
There are two turbines in Falmouth that a number of people, ably led by Malcolm, have objected to. They were put up, I think, in 2007. Does that sound right?
Wind one started causing problems in 2010 when it started, and wind two started causing problems in January or February of 2011.
And they were put up by the town. They were voted in by the town. There's been a lot of controversy in the town about whether to keep them up on that town land. There was a referendum this spring on them. And the secretary said, and I said, that if the town decided to take them down, we would help in any way we could. The town voted, I believe the margin was 3-1, maybe it was 4-1, not to take them down. I know you want me to take your view on this, but I don't think it's within my jurisdiction to substitute for what the town and its members want.
Malcolm, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Governor, I asked you a quick question. We learned this morning that yet another young woman was killed in Boston. She was with her boyfriend. I mean, she wasn't killed. I'm sorry. She was shot in Boston. She was with her boyfriend. They both are going to survive. But it was the seventh shooting in Boston in 3 days, and there's this trend now of shooting women in the cars with their boyfriends and stuff. We had Reverend Eugene Rivers in here yesterday, and he was lambasting mostly city leaders, but black political leaders, you know, the city councilors and so forth, saying they're not doing enough. They're putting up with this outrage. We should be in an all-out, a full-court press against this kind of stuff.
Gene wrote about it on the weekend.
In the Herald,
yes, he did, and that was before this latest shooting. Mm-hmm. What's your response to that?
Well, I mean, he's obviously right. I mean, it's more than tragic, and I think part of the upset that he and others feel, and I share it, is that there's so much of it we're almost numb to it. You know, it doesn't generate the kind of emergency response, I think, that other crimes do. In fact, that you remember it wasn't too long after the marathon bombings when people were. Did we talk about
this? Yes, we did talk about this. These shootings were basically ignored and there were people killed, lots of shootings.
Yeah, I mean,
there's well over 100. But should the onus be on black political leaders or should it be on
everybody? No.
Because he was singling out black political leaders.
No, I get that. I've heard Gina on that point before, but it's not any one political leader's responsibility. In fact, it's not even any one. It's not even up to political leaders entirely or mainly. There's a whole business about rebuilding community and rebuilding family, which belongs to all of us.
Do you think you've done enough on this?
I think I've done what I can. You know, my jurisdiction is a little different, but the Safe and Successful Youth Initiative, which I think we've talked about in the past, which is very much about focusing on root causes, and more of the data show that people who have been the victim of crime, of violent crime and of violence, are the ones who will perpetrate that that violence. So how do you intervene and when, and you know, how do you deal with them and on their way to the criminal justice system, how you target people. And we have some pretty good results in the early days of that. Now, I will say that in at least one of the legislative budget proposals, they totally zeroed that out. It's not a lot of money, but it's high-impact money, and we're trying to get that back in. That's a part of it. By the way, that's not to the point to your question about whether I alone have done enough. The whole frame of that initiative is to build partners with local leaders, with church leaders, with community leaders, with street workers, and so forth, and with families. And to be very, very targeted about the people who most people know are the perpetrators.
Who's doing
and
this.
They know,
yeah.
Right?
Governor, speaking of money, before we get back to the calls, a couple of years ago when the Globe wrote a story about the head of a public utility, which has no competition, getting roughly $8 million a year, Tom May at NSTAR, we talked to you about it. And I think your answer, and I'm going to paraphrase, and I know you'll correct me, was, listen, there's a board of directors, and they have to deal with this. We read in the Globe the other day, $80 million in holdings for Tom May. Again, runs NSTAR. There's no competition. Another blackout in the South End, in the Back Bay, pardon me, a week or so ago. When you read that somebody has no competition in a public utility, it has $80 million. What's your reaction when you open up the paper?
Well, it's a heck of a gig, isn't it? I mean, it's a regulated monopoly. Frankly, I wish there was a way. I mean, leaving aside the compensation issue, I know that was your question,
yeah,
but leaving
right.
aside the compensation issue, I wish there was a way to rethink what a modern utility is and to really get some competition in around rates. Do you remember years ago, there was all this about deregulating the electricity rates? And I don't remember, I want to say it was back when Governor Well was in office. I'm not sure.
There was a ballot question, and actually a friend of mine, the late John O'Connor, and I led the opposition. We lost roughly 2-1 on that question. The voters decided to go ahead with it.
But I think what the voters were sold was that this was going to lead to competition
exactly.
that would drive down rates. Well, that's not – rates have gone down, by the way, in the last 3 or 4 years. But not on account of competition, but because gas prices have driven them down, and it was never set up so that there would be actual competition that the consumer would experience, being able to choose between company X and company Y on electricity rates. Now, how to do that, what that model is, I don't know.
Well, we asked you, actually, Margie wrote about this. We asked you a couple of years. Jake Kaufman from Lexington has a bill.
Are you talking about the local
to make it easier
to municipals? Yeah.
And by the way, there were 41 local municipal power companies in 1921, I think it was, and there's still 41 because the big utilities essentially stop. Control the process.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't say I don't know what the model is. That's a model.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very town by town, kind of model. But it's a start. And I've said before at least in terms of its principles, it seems like something I'd want to support. But it is really frustrating. I listen to. And we work with utilities. You know, we've worked with them on cleanup after storms and response times and preparation and what have you, redundancies and so forth. We're working now on the whole alternative generation strategies and how we get competition around solar and wind and hydro as a way to break ourselves from some of the dependencies we have on markets that are very volatile, and also drive down costs for consumers. I think there is some model that some smart person is soon going to think up, which is a direct competition with the existing model of the regulated utility. And I hope to know that person and work with that
person
when it comes.
So they compete against each other.
So that you and I have a choice on what electric rates we're going to pay.
Because what you hear all the time, and you've heard this too, is that in order to make more money for Tom May and more money for shareholders, that what happens is the people that used to be employed by the hundreds and hundreds to go out and trim the trees and do these things are losing their jobs. And then when there's a disaster, people have to come in from out of state to help the local people. And that doesn't happen in the municipal light companies. Mm-hmm.
Before you go back to the coals, how do you feel about the $80 million bucks?
I thought it was 90.
80.
Someday I hope it's you and me. But like I said, it's a regulated monopoly. And that to me is the more fundamental issue.
Got it back to the coals. He's Governor Deval Patrick with us and you till 1 o'clock. 877-301-8970, Governor.
Let's see. Scott is calling from Yarmouthport. Scott, you there?
I'm here. How are you, Gov?
I'm okay. How are you?
Gov.
Good. We met over at the compound one of your years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, when Ted threw a little party for you.
La-di-da.
Yeah. You get all these first name bases. No, that's how you
it's
doing.
It's a pleasure to go there and support you, Governor.
Thank you.
Listen, Gov, we got a problem with this Open Cape project down here, the $40 million that's been spent. And I don't know whether or not you've gotten any wind of it yet.
We just lit that up, didn't we, last week?
I don't know. You got a headache with it, though. I got to tell you, whether you lit it up or you didn't light it up, it doesn't matter. You got problems.
Yes.
And the problems are that you have a $40 million investment bringing over cable or high-speed access or fiber optics access that's only available to a very select few businesses down here on the Cape.
Mm-hmm.
It's not available. If a small business wants to bring this in, it's about $5,000 an eighth of a mile to bring it to their offices, and then they have the privilege of spending 20% more than Comcast.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, this service is not available to any residents here on the Cape.
Mm-hmm.
So none of the taxpayers can have any of this service available. And I got to tell you, it's like the internet service. It's like the bridge to nowhere.
No, that's not true.
Well, I'm telling you, Governor, I think it's something you need to look at.
Let me
are getting thrown under the bus left and right. And if you really did some digging down here, I think you'd find out that there are a lot of headaches with this thing.
Scott, let's hear from the governor if we can, please.
So for listeners who don't know what we're talking about, Open Cape, like the Mass 123 project out in western Massachusetts, is about middle-mile connectivity to the internet. And what that means is basically bringing the trunk in to public safety, hospitals, schools, civic organizations, so they have access to high-speed internet. And it's very much based on the model of the rural electrification back in the 30s. What Scott, I think, is referring to, and it's an issue out in the Cape as well, excuse me, out in the West as well, is the so-called last mile. The problem has been that it isn't commercial. It's not commercially viable, or has not been commercially viable, for private companies to come in and make those investments, just as they weren't. It wasn't commercially viable for electrification. So government got it almost to the house, and now it's up to private companies to do the rest. What Scott, you may be interested to know, and others, is that we're going to look now at whether there is a way through a little bit of public money to incentivize the private companies to come in and finish, so that individual homeowners and small businesses can also have access to high-speed internet. And basically, you know, it's not a luxury anymore. It's a necessity to connect to customers, to connect to education resources, to connect to medical records and all the rest. So we're getting there.
Scott, thanks. Governor, speaking of a necessity, affordable housing is a necessity. About a week ago or somewhere thereabout, you announced this plan to create, I don't know what it was, thousands of 10,000 multifamily housing units, this smart growth thing near subways, trains. Give us the short version of that, if you can.
Sure. It's about mortgages for below median income families through a program called it's the sort of revised version of the Soft Second Program, and which is a program that's been around for a while, been highly successful, very very low default rate, I think lower than most commercial banks, and it's done through commercial banks. And the idea is to make these loans more broadly available so that there are 10,000 new homeowners that we can enable over the next short while, with products developed by private lenders specifically for below median income homebuyers and families, with a little bit of state subsidy. And it's repaid itself, you know, in multiples over the years. And the hope is to target that in urban areas, gateway cities, and close to transportation.
How do people apply for this thing? Where do they get information?
They can get information on the web at masshousing.org.
Governor, I am probably the only person who has this point of view, so I'll beat the dead horse one more time. Tim Murray resigned, your lieutenant governor, a couple of weeks ago, and he's been praised by you for your whole tenure as a partner and that sort of thing. I broached with a number of people how upset I was that a guy who's in the middle of his term, who makes a commitment to the public, decides to leave, gets a $75,000 increase in the private sector. Not one person has shared my concern about this.
Nonetheless.
So I'm going to try briefly with you.
Do it again.
In all seriousness, you make a commitment. You and he made a commitment in whatever it was, November of, I'm sorry, what year were you elected?
2006.
Most recently, whatever it was, 2010,
yeah.
To serve 4 years. Mm-hmm. He's got a job opportunity. It's not like he's being offered a, you know, ambassadorship or a secretary of state or something. And he leaves, essentially, from my perspective, because there's an opportunity to get a $75,000 pay increase. And then you list all of the incredibly important things at that press conference that he's done. Why shouldn't I, as a taxpayer, be upset that he's not there to do those things because he found a better opportunity?
Well, you know, look, I miss him. I wish he hadn't left, because he was a really valuable partner and a joy to serve with. There was an opportunity in some ways, sort of once in a lifetime. It made perfect sense for him. I think the irony of these jobs is that you spend many, many days feeling like people are trying to run you out of office, and then when you leave, some guy on the radio expresses outrage that you did. So he goes with my blessing and my thanks. And I think that's a perspective shared by most of us out here. Jim, I'm sorry.
No, I agree. I'm in the minority. By the way, there was some dispute as to whether or not your administration helped him find the job. Where's the—
No, there's no dispute
nothing.
About that.
There was no help from
him. No. I wish he was still there. I hope I've been clear about that.
You know, just a couple of emails. I've been remiss in reading the emails. A lot of the emails have to do with welfare reform and gasoline pumps, as mm-hmm. I told you. People are very concerned about that. Mm-hmm. But here's one from Bernard, who—and by the way, there's some individual ones that are too specific to read, but I'll give them to you, Bonnie, before you guys leave. believe. The question for
Bonnie is a disembodied person who was an aide to the governor.
That's right.
I was here for those who don't know. I'm sorry.
Actually, I won't give them to you.
We will. Go ahead.
Yeah, right.
We got
it. But here's the question from Bernard. He wants to know why the RMV stopped notifying drivers when their license has expired.
By mail. Yeah.
Yeah, this seems to bother.
That came up and bit me in the, you know what, too.
Yeah. I think next to gas pumps, that is a big issue that people are concerned about.
There is a lot of business that the RMV has been driving to the web for cost-saving reasons, and this is a part of it. I mean, I wish I got my, you know, how many of us actually checked the expiration date on our license?
Some of us are obsessed with that, Governor.
Is that right?
It's your birthday. And the older I get, the more I worry about those birthdays. You know what I mean?
Okay, all right.
Did you mean you personally ran afoul of it? Is that the point you were trying to make a minute ago?
I did.
And
yes.
You had an expired. What did you have?
It was about to expire or had expired or something like that. So,
Oh wow!
I was not driving. Thank you.
We did not have that story in the Herald. So. Governor drives with expired license.
I didn't say I drove with an expired license, but I have known certain outlets that would make that fact up. And
but
I
not
won't
us.
Mention them.
Let's take another call, Governor, if we can. Squeeze one more in.
I drive with an expired license, actually. and
Robert,
registration.
Robert is calling from Boston. Robert, are you there?
Hey, Will. Robert.
Hey, Governor. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, but my headphone is... I can't hear you. What's happening?
I'm in the parking lot. Man, it took so long for you to pick up. I'm picking my daughter.
Are you hearing anything, Governor?
I'm getting it. Whoops.
We got it now. I hope.
I got it.
Try it again, Robert.
Sorry, Robert.
Hey, I'm sorry for the call. I'm in Children's Hospital parking lot. My daughter has strep. But I wanted to say thank you for the time you spent with my girls during the Boston bombing. My girls were the ones who interviewed you.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Amazing. Is one of those girls the one with strep?
Yeah, the one that you spoke to, yeah. Well, her sister had it. She's back in school. Now the other one has it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I hope they feel better. They were very professional.
Yes, and they're interested in getting that picture that I took of you guys signed. Could that happen?
Yes. You know what? Hang on the phone.
Stay on
hold.
We'll
get your contact information. We'll get it for you, Robert.
Hey, Governor, if we got a huge amount of calls, email about the killing of the bear over the turnpike a couple of weeks ago. No, I'm serious.
Right. We did.
There's a fabulous photograph of you and Western Mass little bear cubs in your coat.
It was the same bear, you know.
No,
did you
it's
know
not
that was the
same.
Bear that you clutched that grew up a few months later and was shot down?
It was
down?
Not, Governor.
Look at
don't
him. Governor's lip is trembling.
What's this? I mean, there were Emily Rooney was here. She's appalled. Marjorie was appalled. The Globe editorial page called it cruel. What's going on with this with the Mass Environmental Police?
Time is up.
No, where is this?
Thank you so much for having me this
Where is this, Governor?
I don't know. I had a similar reaction. It's one of the environmental, the naturalist who works for the state. I don't remember exactly the term, but somebody who is familiar with animal behavior and habitat. Migration was saying that more and more of us closer to cities are going to have to get used to what we are used to out in Western Massachusetts, that bears are going to come in the backyard and eat the black bears, which don't like people, by the way.
The brown bears are okay, or is
the
black
bears are you know, quote unquote okay in the sense that they don't like people. We don't have brown bears much around, if at all.
It was Yogi, I think. Not sure.
You asked for a serious answer.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, I
you
asked
are
for
talking
a serious
about
answer.
Cartoons?
She did not.
I'm sorry.
Anyhow, that because apparently male bears stake out a territory and they keep that territory for a long time, and they fight and compete with other male bears for that territory. So if there's another male bear, they will chase that bear out. And as the bear population is growing, that male bear then looks for new territory. So they're coming closer and closer to urban areas, and we're going to have to all of us, including at the the environmental police, are going to have to learn to manage that differently.
I don't know if you have an opinion on this, but should we raise the minimum wage? Big hearings up in Beacon Hill.
Yeah, the question is how much and when. I think there's a general consensus we should.
Now, Governor, before you go, this is probably the most important question of the day. Assuming the Bruins, we hope this doesn't happen, of course. If the Bruins were to lose the Stanley Cup playoffs,
that's
and you had to go
happen.
To a soup kitchen. In Chicago, which is part of the deal. Isn't that the bet you made with the guy?
Right.
How do you feel about Bill Galvin being governor while you're out there? Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Have you spoken to him about that?
About
the governor thing now that you don't have a lieutenant governor?
Yes.
You have?
Yeah.
What do you think about the Bruins? You've been into the, did you go to the game the other night?
I did not go to the game. Who can afford the tickets?
Tom May can afford the tickets, actually.
That's right.
Governor Patrick will probably say if I don't, so I'll beat him to it. Every single person online, if you hold, we'll take your phone number. The governor's office will contact you. If you have an email, they'll be forwarded to the governor's office, and they will respond. Governor, congratulations on your grandkid. And
thank you very much
for your time. We'll see you next month.
Thank you very much for being here, Governor Deval Patrick. Okay, up next, we're going to be joined by Charlie Baker. Charlie Baker, who ran against Governor Deval Patrick for governor. We're going to talk to him about a bunch of stuff, including the Supreme Court decisions that just came down this week about patents. Stay tuned for that conversation on WGBH Radio, 89.7 WGBH.